Good morning to you.
Good morning, Judge.
You may approach. And Mr. Odgaard, good morning to you. Do either of you have any questions before we begin?
No.
Then, Mr. Barber, you may proceed.
Okay. Thank you, Your Honor. First, I'd like to attempt at least to reserve a minute and a half for rebuttal, if I might. My name is Terry Barber. Mr. Chief Justice, members of the court, I'm here this morning representing the O'Connell parties to this case. In October of 2020, the Lancaster County Treasurer issued a treasurer's tax deed to Jacinta, and that tax deed conveyed the O'Connell home to that company. A few days later, we filed a quiet title action in Lancaster County in early November, and the purpose of that was to attack the validity of the tax deed that had been issued by the county treasurer. Now, this is a little bit of a unique case because we've had some intervening events, not the least of which is the Tyler case out of Minnesota. When the briefs were filed in January of this year, the issues raised were relatively straightforward. Your standard of review is de novo. The O'Connell complaint was dismissed on a motion to dismiss. The Jacinta claims were granted. They were granted summary judgment, and that occurred in September of 2022.
Counsel, can I interrupt before you get to the merits of your argument? I have some, I guess, procedural questions.
Sure.
You were talking about Jacinta's claims, and your complaint, or at least your amended complaint, is in the appellate record. The original complaint isn't, and the answer and counterclaims is referred to by the court in some orders and elsewhere in our appellate record, but I don't see the answer and counterclaims there. So I don't have a clear understanding of the pleading framework. Can you help me with that?
I can, but if the... I'm going through in my mind the transcript, and it does not have a copy of the
answer
or counterclaims of Jacinta. Jacinta's counterclaim, as I recall, was a claim for...
The record refers to more than one counterclaim.
Ejectment and unjust enrichment, okay. I believe, were the two. We had a quiet title action, so they couldn't use the forcible entry statutes as a basis for their claim, because the two aren't allowed to coexist in a lawsuit.
So what was the unjust enrichment counterclaim?
The unjust enrichment counterclaim had to do with the O'Connells living there, which they continued to do after October of 2020 until the spring of 2022. And they didn't make rent deposits or anything. They continued to live there just as if they owned it, and they made some mortgage payments because there was a mortgage on it at the time with Great Western.
Were they ordered to make rent payments during the pendency of the proceedings?
In the spring of 22, as I recall, is a motion was made for rents, and there was an order entered, I believe, in May. It was either April or May of 2022, during those proceedings is when it came to light what the discrepancy was between the amount of the tax sale certificate that had been issued and the value of the property, which was the tax certificate was under $500. The assessed value of the property was in the range, depending on which year you look at, between $90,000 and $110,000. The when the brief was filed in January of this year, I raised the issues that, in fact, a plausible claim had been stated on the basis of an excessive fine by the city of Lincoln. And the second assignment of error was that summary judgment had been improvidently granted because there were substantial issues of material fact that were raised and supported in evidence by the O'Connells. And in particular, those two issues of fact had to do with whether the city of Lincoln had in fact released the lien that it had, which purportedly then was sold to Jacinta, and whether the lien that they did have for weed mowing is how the charges arose, merged into a pre-existing security agreement that they had with Mrs. O'Connell, which not only secured repayment of some funds that had been loaned to Mrs. O'Connell by the city, but also any additional charges that were incurred or expenses that were incurred by the city. So, and this is the posture of the case as we saw it in January, that you have de novo review on those issues. So I think regardless of anything that occurred in the United States Supreme Court out of Minnesota, this appeal has merit, and upon de novo review, I think there's ample basis to reverse Judge Ott's decision and send this back for reconsideration.
Can I slow us down, and I beg your pardon, this is, I think, a follow-up with respect to Justice Stacy's question on the state of the record.
Mm-hmm.
Did Jacinta file a cross-claim?
I'm not sure what the denomination of it was, and I don't have it with me this morning. It was either a counterclaim or a cross-claim.
Is it possible they filed a cross-claim in the nature of quiet title? Would that make sense?
That would be possible, yeah. I apologize. I don't...
Thank you.
I didn't notice that it was absent from the record.
What relief are you now seeking in this case? I mean, there's been a mention of quiet title, there's been a mention of excessive fines, taking without just compensation. What among those claims or others is on the table as you see it?
Well, as we are here this morning, Judge, what I'm asking is to have the case reversed, have Judge Ott's decisions reversed, and the case remanded for further proceedings.
And now, what claims, assuming we do that, then what claims are at issue back in the district court?
Well, if we go back to the district court, what we have pled in the amended complaint, which was filed in July of 22, is we pled alternative relief. We pled on the one hand that we recover the excess value, that being the difference between the amount of the underlying obligation, $469 and some odd cents, as I recall, and the value of the property. In the alternative, we ask for a return of the property. So we've done that in the alternative, and the basis of the alternative pleading is that in condemnation proceedings, it's relatively common practice if you attack the necessity of the taking as well, that you plead both compensation and return of the property in the alternative.
Is Jacinta the correct party to pay just compensation? I mean, normally that's paid by a state actor. Normally it's a state actor that completes a taking, and I don't see any governmental parties in this case.
One of the things, when I filed a supplemental brief, in late August, I believe it was, the 21st or something. I made reference to a brief that was prepared in a separate case. I think it's your case number 21-74, excuse me, which is the...
Continental
Resources and Terry Fair case. On page 22 of the brief that was the supplemental brief that was filed on behalf of Mr. Fair, they discuss the issue about what difference does it make that it wasn't the city or the county, the city of Lincoln or the county of Lancaster that gained from this, and it was a private investor. And the argument that I find persuasive on behalf of Mr. Fair is that actually Jakinta took on the role of a state actor and was an active participant in the taking, if we get to that stage of it being a taking. That's the argument that was made, and I asked in the supplemental brief, and I actually attempted to file a copy of Mr. Fair's brief in this case, and that was one of the reasons for doing so. But as the argument goes, they actually participated and actually would be categorized as a state actor. I'm asking that since my time is out, unless there are some questions, we are asking that this matter be reversed by the court and that the case be remanded to the District Court of Lancaster County for proceedings, both in light of the ruling on the errors that we have assigned and in light of the case that's been decided by the Supreme Court by the name of Tyler versus Hennepin County. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Mr. Odgard, good morning to you.
Good morning, Your Honor. May it please the court. My name is Mark Odgard. I am here on behalf of the appellee, Jacinta Land Holdings. This case was brought to this court. Essentially, there are two assignments of error that the appellant is alleging. One is that the summary judgment was done incorrectly, essentially that the order should not have been entered for the summary judgment. The second is on appellee's motion to dismiss. I'd like to address the first one, if I may.
Counsel, before you reach the merits, can I get your input on the procedural question that I asked Mr. Barber about the counterclaims alleged by your client?
Yes.
What are they?
They quiet title and also an ejectment action. So we initially we had filed something in the county court to take possession of the property, forcible entry and detainer, and then they had submitted, essentially they had filed the claim in district court, which took it out of county court's jurisdiction. So then we went to district court, we filed for an ejectment after their complaint was filed.
So the record that we have, the trial judge makes reference to a couple of different times to unjust enrichment, and the parties in their arguments to the court mention an unjust enrichment claim. Mr. Barber today told us that the counterclaim was one for unjust enrichment. Do you agree or disagree?
And I'm a little bit embarrassed to say I don't know if I can't recall at this time whether or not I included that unjust enrichment claim in my counterclaim. And so I'm
let's assume you did.
Okay.
Did the trial court ever rule on a claim for unjust enrichment with respect to retroactive rents?
It entered a judgment in our favor as far as, I filed a motion for rent because essentially taking the position that we had title at the time. The appellants were living in the property at the time. And so that matter was taken under advisement and the court did enter a judgment in our favor that they were to pay us, I think it was $1,600 a month.
You call that a judgment, and I just want to be sure I understand your position, because that is in the appellate record, that order, and it was styled as a temporary order.
Yes.
And it didn't address retroactive rents back to the date of the tax deed. It simply directed the plaintiff to deposit a certain amount of rent with the clerk of the court to be held on the first of each month during the pendency of the case.
Yes.
So how do you get from that temporary order to what you're describing as a judgment? Was it referenced in anything else that's not in our record?
No, there's a judgment in the district court at this point based on the amount of money that has not been paid. They haven't paid any.
Where's the judgment, sir?
It's simply in the district court. It
entered when?
It's accumulated. They have made no payment. They've made no payment on that rental that was ordered to be paid.
So is that it's based just, off the temporary order?
Yes.
So temporary order is the judgment you're referring to?
Yes. That it was just an order entered at our request after the court had a hearing on it. We had requested for the equities of the case, we requested that $1,600 be paid by them on a monthly basis. The judge entered that as a temporary order at that time, yes. Regarding the assignment of error, the summary judgment, 77-1844, the first issue to consider for this court is whether or not the appellant had standing to bring to actually bring the case. None of the record reflects that the appellant made any payment or offered to make any payment toward the treasurer, which is required by 77-1844. Autico Acceptance, Inc., the Larkin 273-765, essentially says that no actual payment must be made, but the attempt must be made. There's no record that any attempt was made. Therefore, we're taking the position that the appellant does not have standing to continue with its claim under 77-1801.
But you filed a counterclaim for quiet title, correct?
Yes.
And is that, what impact, if any, does that have on the trial court's summary judgment ruling with respect to quiet title?
I don't know that that has any impact, not from the standpoint of the appellant being able to bring the case. They've had, this case had gone on for almost 2 years, and in that entire time, the record reflects that no effort was up. They didn't even plead it. They didn't plead that they had attempted to make payment. There was no facts. There were no affidavits that established that they had attempted to make any payment. So based on that, they have no standing to continue with their quiet title action. Again, based in 77-1801. The second part of that, though, also is even if it was determined that they did have standing, the tax deed is presumed. The tax deed that my client received is presumed to be valid, and that is so under 77-1837, reissue 2019. I understand that is going to be modified here very shortly, but under that statute at the time, it clearly establishes that my client, the record reflects that my client complied with all of that. There is also a presumption, that tax deed is valid. Again, Autico Acceptance, Inc. versus Huntzinger states that it is, the burden is on then the appellant to prove that the treasurer's tax deed is not valid, that there is some sort of jurisdictional issue with it. The only facts in the case are that essentially their position is, and their testimony was, they didn't receive personally the notice, so appellees must attempt to serve personally or residentially. If they are not successful, they didn't have to attempt by certified mail. And if that's not successful, they didn't have to publish. The record reflects that they did all of those things. The service just was not completed personally. The service was not completed by certified mail. However, that's not detrimental. And the court, in fact, in both Wisner v. Vandelay and HBI versus Barnett have held that process itself is satisfactory to satisfy the statutory requirements. Regarding the assignment of error number two, the motion to dismiss that was filed by Appley at the trial court and the order itself were reliant entirely upon Continental versus Fair. So there obviously is a bit of an issue there because this court is now in the process of reconsidering Continental versus Fair. But as this court did point out in asking counsel certain questions, I think it's important to look back at that amended complaint that was filed by the appellant. In that amended complaint, it's really very bare bones. They don't allege state actor. They don't allege 1983 allegations. They don't plead the county or the state in the amended complaint. So it is a real concern as far as what claims in that amended complaint they're actually trying to pursue. It is simply a...
I beg your pardon, is there reference to the constitutionality of 77-1801 at SEC?
It does.
I don't know if that's exactly what it says, Judge. In their prayer for relief, they do ask for that it claims that they are entitled to just compensation and setting the amount thereof. It also requests that the court void the deed and return it to them, and also for unjust enrichment. Those are essentially the three things that are included in their prayer for relief.
No allegations above the prayer that would implicate constitutionality.
They do claim that that it is unconstitutional. They do say it's that they claim an amount, a value that they're due and owing in the body of their complaint. They claim an amount that's due and owing based on the assessed value. So they do, that is a fact that they allege.
That's a challenge as to the dollars. I was asking something a little different. Constitutionality mentioned in the complaint?
They do claim, they do state that it is unconstitutional.
Thank you.
Yes, they do. But again, that claim is against only against my client. State and county are not involved.
Can your client be held liable for an excessive fine or an unlawful taking?
Well, the excessive fine, I don't believe was pled, Your Honor, in their amended complaint. It does appear that if they did state a valid cause of action, that it is limited to a takings argument. And I'm going to defer to this court on that ruling. There are some serious questions, though, because there is a difference between what happened in Tyler versus Hennepin versus the case here. Again, Tyler versus Hennepin directly involved the county. It directly involved the county receiving all of the funds from the sale. The statutes obviously are very clearly different. Whether or not there's a public use here for the funds if the court were to determine that there was a taking, whether or not those funds were being used for public use is also up in the air as well. If there are no other questions, thank you.
Thank you very much. Do we have any time for rebuttal?
No, Your Honor.
There is no time for rebuttal, counsel. That concludes arguments in O'Connell versus Jacinta Land Holdings 7 LLC. So you are excused. Our next case of the day then is Fraternal Order of Police Lodge number 88 versus State of Nebraska. I am recused in this matter. Justice Miller-Lerman will be presiding, so give me a moment to get